It is Scotch o'clock. That means it is time for Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, what do you got in your hand right now?
Always, well, not always Guinness, but Guinness.
Guinness! Yay, we're back to Guinness again. How was your week?
Well, the week was good. Picked up the Scotch for next week's throwdown.
I'm looking forward to that.
P-Town. Yeah, we got two bottles of it, so you better drink them, both fuckface.
Oh, trust me, you will not have to try to convince me to drink that Scotch. That is good Scotch.
You know, when we were having trouble finding it, I was just convinced that we should find some, like, peat moss, throw some salt in it and some water and put it in a cup and, you know, just
Scotch is not peaty at all. That Scotch is not peaty at all. It's very smooth and it has a hint of orange peel. But moving on. This week I got another game of Firestorm Armada in, which was really fun, and picked up a bunch more stuff for that. So I think I'll have around 1,000 points now, which is pretty cool. And, so that's been good, actually. I'm probably going to be planning on writing a blog post for kind of second impressions of the game, kind of after the second game and kind of where I feel like it's going, because, still having a really fun time with it. So,
that's awesome.
Let's move on to higher learning for this week, which is the orcs, the space orcs for Warhammer 40,000. Oh, God,
wow,
I love
them. Back-to-back greenskins.
I know, right? But, oh my God, I love Space Orcs. Space Orcs have always been one of those armies that I think the majority of Warhammer 40,000 players, very similar to Eldar, they do. You always end up looking at Orcs at one point or another.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one of those fun armies. I remember, this codex is pretty good. I personally kind of miss some of the fluff rules that were in the old one, like the mob-up rule and, you know, things like that. I just love the idea of when orcs get scared, they don't run for the table or for the board edge. They run for more orcs.
Right.
You know, that was really fun, but I agree. I think Space Orcs are absolutely fantastic, top-notch army. They are a converter, a modeler's dream. Because
very much so.
Orcs are an army that you are literally limited by your imagination. You know, if you can imagine it, then you just have to, not round the corners, and it's orky.
Well, and we had talked about this a little bit before when we had gotten that email asking us about, you know, converting orc wagons and things of that nature. It is very much a sky's the limit type situation when it comes to orcs. And you can play the normal kits as they are sold off the shelf, which are beautiful as of the last 2 or 3 years when they've come out with all of these new kits for them. Especially like the Killikans and the Dreadnought and things of that nature.
Oh, love the Dreadnought.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
I will never
kits.
Do an orc army because I already have too many horde armies, but good God, do I want to paint an orc dread.
I know. Like, I've already got a Dreadnought and 3 Killikans that I painted up myself, and it's just like, but I want the new ones, you know. But no, I mean, I think that it's a very, very cool army. It's a very competitive army. I think that orcs, more than any other army in the game, have traveled the scale of nerfed to overpowered, right? Like, you know, like, there's this idea that, like, oh, an FAQ will come out and all of a sudden the orcs are just this unbeatable horde, and then the next FAQ comes out and they're just nerfed, and it's so funny to see people talk about the orcs with
we're
this
looking
mentality.
At you, death roller.
Yeah, the death roller, that was easily
that was like the biggest WTF. The biggest no one, it totally works on tanks too. What do you mean it works on tanks?
Yeah, why not, right?
That's ridiculous. True. I don't think orcs are overpowered, but I really think that a well-built orc army in the hands of a very competent general is fucking scary as shit.
Right.
Like, orcs are one of those armies that traditionally I struggle against because, back in the day, the only people that played orcs were, like, fucking gods with them, and you never wanted to play
them. Right.
And now there's just so many good builds that you can do with it. And it's never, you know, it's not like you're running into Space Wolves where you're just like, I need to deal with his long fangs and game.
Right.
You know, orcs can come at you sideways. And I always appreciate that. And it's always one of those, matchups that always make me a little bit nervous for the first couple turns where I'm feeling out the guy I'm playing.
Very much so. And I think one of the cool things about orcs for Warhammer 40,000 is they are very, very different from what you would see for orcs in fantasy, because they don't really suffer from things like animosity and these other rules that kind of shut them down if you happen to roll the odd dice. Like, there's not so much, you know, fuck my life involved in space orcs for Warhammer 40,000, you know? And
yeah.
you know, honestly, I play a fairly shooty Space Orc army, and people are always amazed at how much I hit. And it's just like, well, when you're rolling 40 dice, you do hit relatively often on fives and sixes, you know? I think as a Horde army, when it comes to the fluff, they play very well for kind of whatever kind of list you want to build. If you want to go the Knobs and Mega Armor road, if you want to go the All Transport and Battle Wagons road, if you want to go the Wakas and the Killicans road or the Cannon, like, there's so many different ways that you can play that army, and they all kind of fuse together very, very well to kind of, you know, run around this idea of like, well, it's a Horde one way or another.
Well, and what I really appreciate about the Orc book itself is unlike other codexes, especially the newer ones, where if you try to mix these elements, your army ends up being, you know, sort of not optimized and, you know, has these gaping holes in it. Yes. Because it's just like, oh, you know, if you were doing this, you should have stuck with it. Orcs are an army where, with the exception of a couple choices...
Commandos.
You can really throw... Oh, commandos with Snickrod are a staple, dude.
Well, I'm not talking...
Walk up behind and gank things, but...
You're talking about special characters. I don't play with special characters in 40K for some reason. I don't know why. I love special characters in fantasy, but for some reason, I don't touch special characters in 40K. I don't know why.
So you would be the only Space Marine army that isn't led by Vulcan Hestan? I don't
pretty much, it, but, pretty hey. Much. Like, I had somebody tell me with my Space Marine army, is they're like, oh, which special character are you taking? I'm like, oh, none. They're like, well, you're just setting yourself up to lose. And I'm just like, why? They're just like, well, you know, are you going to take a librarian? I'm like, possibly. They're like, take Tigerius. And I'm just like, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
No, it's changed a lot since I was really heavy into 40K, though.
Fair enough. But I mean, you know, sort of back to what I was saying with orcs is they are one of the only armies that you are able to just take this, you know, hodgepodge of things and still have a very good list. You know, I mean, it still comes down to a super optimized list you can give to anyone and they can do well. Whereas, you know, the more hodgepodge and ragtag it is, the more you kind of have to know what you're doing. But, yep. You know, your list still doesn't have any holes aside from those that are kind of built into the Orc book, which is, you know,
Blister really still too.
Well, not even that, because as you said, you just throw 800 dice, and who gives a shit if only the fives and sixes.
Well, that's on mob units, right? Like, that's not necessarily, like, your tanks or your Killicans or your trucks or all of these other things where it's just like, I've got three dice. Okay, no hits.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. But, you know, like I said, you know, there are some things built into the list as inherent weaknesses. Otherwise, you know, they'd be the mech vet spam guard list, right?
Right.
But aside from those, because those are codex level, you can do whatever you want and you can still have a fun game and you can still have a really good idea of what you're doing and have a good chance at winning. And that's what I really appreciate about the Orc book, is it is friendly in that manner. And as someone that used to have a Horde army and then got shafted by Robin Credits, that's right, I will never stop saying
this. Is and that is five joke. Episodes in a row, ladies and gentlemen.
Fuck Jesus. You. Any time I can throw it in, hell, did I throw it into the Firestorm one?
God, yes, you're like the rejected boyfriend where you were just like, we dated for 7 years and that slut started sleeping around and you can't have a conversation without you bringing that whore up.
No, it's true. But my point is like I said, I used to have a really Horde style Tyranids. I used to aim for the 150 model mark at any points level. I mean, it was fun. Orcs are now the only army that can truly run a good mixed Horde. I mean, Guard can get away with it. Not that any Guard player in the history of Guard has ever said, I'm going to take 300 bodies.
Right.
But, you know, they could do it, but it's still a very static gunline kind of army. Orcs, on the other hand, like I said, there's this dynamic Horde. You can literally just litter the field with bodies, throw out 200 guys, 250 guys. And it's rock solid.
You know? At toughness four, it's really hard to deal with. And if you put a mega mech boy, right? What's the name of it? The mech.
You're going to have to finish what he
big
does
mech.
For me to name
big
it.
Mech. The big mech. The big mech with a custom force field giving you a 5+ cover save for your entire horde, like the middle of the table. Like,
yeah.
It's huge. It's huge. And I think, you know, the army, like you say, it has its drawbacks, but they've got all these cool little things built in that, like you say, they come at you sideways, you know? Like, there are always ways to deal with them. They're just not conventional ways.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, you know, really, with them being truly the only competitive horde in 40K, you know, tipping my hat off. Oh, fuck yeah. Tyranids can't play the horde game. And like I said, guard are too static. They've got that big glaring weakness of close combat. So, I mean, if you run a guard horde, one outflanking unit that can charge off the bat, because if you're spread out, is going to start, you know, killing 50 guys at a time. So, I mean, that's why they're really the only competitive horde.
Yeah, I'm saying they're the best horde. I agree with you, they are the best horde, but I wouldn't necessarily agree that they are the only competitive horde. I would say easily they are the best horde. If you want to play a horde army, play orcs. They're where it's at.
Who else could be competitive? Because if you say Tyranids, they'll tell you you're wrong. I've played horde Tyranids this edition. And
I really like the new codex, so I think they work really good.
You are just lucky there are hundreds of kilometers separating my hand from your face.
Well, that's, you know, not all that great. But, you know, I think the other thing to note about the Orc army is that, like I said before, they do kind of span the range of people claiming that they're nerfed and people claiming that they're overpowered. And part of that is because of the fact that their codexes do change quite a bit every time the new codex comes out. You know, it's different from like Space Marines. It's different from like Eldar, where
that's because
there's a couple changes here and there.
They just make everything better and cheaper. They're like, Johnson, okay. Good.
Talking about orcs right now, Nathan. We're talking about orcs. But what I'm saying is, if you look at a lot of those other real mainstream army books, they do change and things get slightly altered. But for the most part, the core of the army doesn't change at all. Whereas the orcs, the tactics kind of tend to change between books. The units change a lot between books. I mean, we've seen units go from one end of the spectrum to the other end completely, where Ludas are 100% different, Burnas are 100% different, you know. And, you know, this happens almost every codex.
Yeah, and not to mention the shift between, you know, in their last codex, the Slugaboy was where it's at with that chopper rule.
Yes.
Good God, the chopper rule of you could never have better than a 4+ save. They ate Terminators alive.
Yes.
So, I mean, everybody was running, you know, Chopperboy, you know, Slugaboys with their Sluggas and their Choppas. Whereas this codex, you know, they obviously don't have that rule anymore. Mm-hmm. And then the Shooter getting, you know, two shots, 18-inch range up from 12 was one of those things where you're just like, why the fuck don't I take Shooter boys? Like, it's just
better than a Shuriken catapult.
Hey, I'm 6 points and I have a Dire Avenger Shuriken catapult.
It's done and done. But yeah, I think that if anybody's looking to get into a Space Orc army, I think that you should really keep two things in mind. The first thing is build around the core, and the core should be a lot of boys, whether it's Slugaboys or Shootaboys. I personally feel you should have a mix, and then you're never going to be let down when the codex changes or if an FAQ changes something or, you know, or if the you know, next edition of the game changes something dramatically for you. You can always build around that. You know, if you've got two 30-man units of each or one 30-man unit of each, you'll always be in good shape.
Yeah,
the other thing, let me get
to
number two. Jeez.
Fuck you, number two. Go for it.
The second thing is have fun with what you're doing, right? Like, don't feel like you have to take specific units. Mm-hmm. If you don't like the idea of knobs with like mishmash hodgepodge of various items so that you can allocate wounds and really, like, you know, make that unit super strong, don't feel like you have to, because it is not a requirement at all.
And if you do feel like you have to, I will punch you in the dick.
Well, there's also that. Didn't GamerCast guarantee Nathan will punch you in the dick? We need to put that on a t-shirt. So let's kind of get on to, and kind of bridging from this, let's get on to our main topic of the week, which is psychic powers in Warhammer 40,000. My feeling specifically with psychic powers is that they always feel forced in a codex. It's like the designers feel like psychic powers should be there, that they have a place in the fluff, so that they should have a place in the rules to some extent. But you read the rules and it's like, well, there's two awesome psychic power and everything else is kind of meh, right? and the rules don't necessarily reflect what you would expect from the fluff, right? You know, like if you read the Eisenhorn trilogy, you know, psychic powers are completely different from what they are in the game. If you go all the way back to, like, you know, your original librarian and his psychic power, it was just like, smite!
And hey,
it's just like, why would you roll for smite when you can just rapid fire a plasma pistol, yeah, right? Like, it's just, it's one of those things that the game is always, to me, that it's always felt like psychic powers are jammed in there uncomfortably. And with the newer books that are coming out, it feels like they're trying to branch out and expand on them more. But again, it always feels out of place. Or it's over, you know, it's over the top and you're just like, oh, why wouldn't you take it? You have to take it. You have to build an army around it.
You know, for me, I don't know. It, psychic powers with Games Workshop, they've never had a fucking clue on how to do it. Right. You know, and this is my biggest problem is, you know, back way, 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 way back in second edition, Games Workshop, basically second edition 40K was fantasy in space. Okay. Yeah. So for those of you that have not played for a very long time, that's literally just all it was, is they were just like, look, we have space dwarves and space elves and everything's in space. We have pigs in space. Yay. Pigs in space. No.
But back anyway, on topic, Nathan. Back on topic.
I'm derailing myself. This is what I get for drinking funny. Before I start drinking for the podcast. But the point, you know, in second edition, Psychic Powers was a card game. You know, so basically you'd stop playing your miniature game to go start playing Magic the Gathering on the side to figure out what psychic powers, you know, effects was going to happen. And this is exactly what 5th edition fantasy did, you know, so basically it was the same. When 3rd edition 40K came out and they decided to split them into two separate games finally, they moved away from psychic powers. Like when you look at early 3rd edition, that was when the librarian had Smite, which was terrible.
It's like a salt 3, strength 5, AP 3 mm-hmm. at like 12 inches or 18
exactly.
inches. Exactly. It was like, 12. It's almost useless.
It absolutely. And the only army at the time that had psychic powers were the Eldar, because they're Eldar, basically, you know. And if you want to know what psychic powers they have, look at the current codex, but take out Doom.
Right.
They have not changed.
Right.
You know. And so through pretty much all of 3rd edition, Games Workshop held to this, you know, let's not put in psychic powers. Let's make them such a low key, almost no one has access to it, you know, things like that. And they kind of played around with the super awesome Chaos Codex giving minor psychic powers for all the different
gods
and things like that.
Yeah.
But again, it was really one of those, hey, isn't this fun and nifty and cool? And then people would abuse the shit out of it by, like, buying 10 to make sure they get Siren and shit like that.
Well, no, it wasn't an issue of like, hey, this is cool and it's this and it's that. It was just, like, the effects were so simple that it was just like, oh, you take this one, it's like a last cannon. You take this one, it's like a power fist.
Yeah,
you take this one, it's like a bomb exploding. Yeah. Right? Like, it was just... If you were to compare it to the Lords of Magic in fantasy, it's almost no compare. It's apples to oranges because, you know, if you look at the Lords of Magic, there's all these different effects and they affect stats and they affect this and they affect that and they control units, they slow them, they reduce their abilities. And in 40K, psychic powers are like, I punch you with my mind.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And, you know... Games Workshop was really on that kick in 3rd edition of let's not have psychic powers. You know, yeah, we'll talk about them in the fluff, they'll do all this, but they're not a part of the game. And as a result, pretty much anything in 3rd edition had no psychic defense, because why would you bother writing it in? It's not something that's in the game.
For anybody who was playing back in 3rd edition, do you remember when a psychic hood was useless?
Yes.
Now it's like, oh my god, psychic hood. Everybody needs a psychic hood.
Now if you're building a tournament list, the very first thing you do is buy a psychic defense. So if you're, you know, it's just like, I don't want a librarian. It doesn't fit my list. I need a librarian. So he's in.
Yeah.
And you that's know, exactly it just, it. That's what you have to do. 4th edition came and they kind of started to stick their toe in the water for psychic powers. You know, they gave, the Space Marine librarians, a bunch of good ones. Chaos Space Marines finally got, you know, good psychic powers. Mm. Orcs got a weird boy, and so you're just like, oh, okay, psychic powers are going to be that neat little thing. They're not going to break the game because basically no one has it, no one has defense, because you're still not writing it in.
Right.
You know, orcs have no defense, chaos has no defense, you know, things like that.
Right.
And then in 5th edition, they just decided, ah, fuck it. The worst part about 40K is they don't have a magic phase.
Well, no, I don't think that it's that, because I'm going to stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that it's that. I think that it's literally that they opened the door, stuck their foot in, and then forgot the door was open. And then some designer was just like, oh my god, that door is open, and then started writing shit in like crazy. I think that's what it was. I think it was just like, I've run out of ideas. Oh my god, guys, psychic powers, right?
Maybe, but I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, you know, they took Tyranids, who were, in the old book, innately psychic, where basically it's like, I had Synapse, and then I had Warp Blast. But if I wanted a strong Warp Blast, that was a psychic check. And everything else was just, you know, it happened all the time. And then in this new book, I mean, fuck, I run through, I would say, 9 to 13 psychic checks a turn.
Right.
And, you know, and this isn't me, you know, building to exploit psychic checks. This is literally just like, no, we hinge the army on it. You want your Tervagon to give out Feel No Pain? Make a psychic check. You want your Zoanthropes to shoot either weapon? Make a psychic check. Look, your Hive Tyrant has these wickedly awesome abilities. One used to be innate. Now you're an idiot for buying it. But if you want to use it, make a psychic check. You know, so it's just
damn
like,
you, Robin Credace.
Fucking asshole. I swear.
Oh my god, he just broke a bottle. He was so pissed off.
It's true. It's actually a glass. I'll just leave it there for now.
That's how mad he is about it.
That is true. You know, I dropped it at the same time that I was going to say that if I ever meet Robin Credace, I was going to punch him in the dick. Like, it just, that was literally what happened.
Oh,
right,
was that
there,
your Guinness?
So. Yes, that
you're
was
gonna
my
be sucking Guinness. It out of the carpet.
See, luckily it was down to the foam, and I was waiting to stop talking so I could open another can, but...
Okay. Well, I'll start talking. You go get yourself more to drink.
You know what? Why don't we just pause and play some music so I can clean up the shards of glass?
Okay, I'm going to pause right now. We're going to play some music. Nathan is going to clean up after his clumsy ass. We'll be right back.
With half a brain, can see that humankind has gone insane, to the point where I don't know if I'll upset the status quo, if I throw poison in the water main. Listen close to everybody's heart, and hear that breaking sound. Hopes and dreams are shattering apart and crashing to the ground. I cannot believe my eyes, how the world's filled with filth and lies. But it's plain to see evil inside of me is on the rise.
And we're back.
Now, with 98% less glass shards.
Yay, less glass shards. Okay, I'm going to kick us back into this conversation. As you were saying, you were speaking specifically about the number of checks now that you have to make with A, the new codex, B, the new edition of the game,
mm-hmm.
changes to other armies, changes to your own army. Some armies are completely unaffected by this, but I think one of the very interesting parts of psychic powers in Warhammer 40,000 is the fact that you have to make a leadership check to do a psychic power.
Yes.
But only, like, top leadership armies even have psychic powers to begin with, right?
Well, yeah,
so we're talking about guys with, like, leadership 10 rolling mm-hmm. psychic powers. You know, like, there's no other rank. Like, even if they were to instate something like, oh, you want to cast a psychic power? That's -3 to your leadership. Hey, now it's something interesting, right?
No, absolutely.
Now it's not just a sure bet.
Because only Imperial Guard Psyker Battle Squads and new Grey Knight Henchmen Psykers have to, you know, worry where they're just like, hey, I may only pass 70% of my psychic checks instead of 95. I don't know. This is, man, what a risk.
Well, see, and that's the thing, is it's like, well, why would you even have that as an element of the game when it literally is it's almost like a waste of time, right? You know, it's like on my lizard men in Warhammer in fantasy, you know, when my cold ones are within range of my slan and BSB, it's leadership 10 cold blooded with a reroll. I don't even roll it sometimes. Like, it's just like, why do you want me to roll it?
For your stupidity, where it's just like, I'm not failing.
Right? Like, it's a 1 in 300. Like, it's just, there's almost no chance of this thing happening. But, you know, I think it's one of those things that if you look at psychic powers as its own section of the game, it's incredibly unbalanced, right? Like, there are items that negate psychic powers. There are some armies that have no psychic powers whatsoever. There are some armies that, like you say, have no psychic defense. And there are some armies that you're just kind of like, well, psychic powers don't affect me. Right? Like, it's just, it's one of those things that it's tacked on. It always feels crammed in.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like, you know, anyway, as I was saying before I decided to, like, throw my glass down in anger and bellow a challenge like a bloodthirster. Damn you, Robin Cruddies. But anyway, as I was trying to get to, is just like Tyranids, I'm taking like 13 checks a turn. Grey Knights are going to be taking almost double that, because they're just like, not only does every unit have a psychic power, every unit has multiple psychic powers. Make sure you choose the one you want, you know. And so it's just one of those things where, you know, I don't particularly like this direction of the game, because it's not fair to every army. You know, I would rather, if they were going to make psychic powers as big as they are, you know, and with some of these really, like, game-changing abilities, you know, because, like, you know, let's go back to, you know, some of those psychic powers. There are so many just remove models. So it's just like Jaws of the World Wolf, you know. I can force you to remove any single model in your army if you fail an initiative check. And, you know, most people are just like, eh, whatever, or, you know, 1 in 3 chance. Until you have an initiative 1 monstrous creature, where it's just like, hey, I just lost 200 points in my army because I couldn't roll a 1.
Right, right.
You know, and I see
where you're going with it, yeah.
Super unbalanced to the point where it's just like there are some very, very powerful psychic powers. And there are some armies that just don't have a defense to it, because it's almost as if the game designers, maybe because they ran out of ideas, or, you know, maybe because they really play a lot of fantasy and love the magic phase, they're bringing a magic phase into 40K, but because they don't have it in the core rule book, you know, it's such an army by army standpoint. Because what even pisses me off about this is you see this move in 5th edition of everyone getting bigger and badder psychic powers and more psychic powers and this and that. And then they release the Dark Eldar, who don't even have any psychic defense.
They still don't have any psychic powers or psychic defense, right?
You know, really, because if you're
They do have an item that makes life hard for psychers, but it's not necessarily defense.
They have an item that says psychers have to make, you know, I think it's leadership. Sorry, I might be completely out of whack. I remember it's basically the old Archangel of Pain.
Right.
Where it's just like, oh, they make psychic powers, and if one fails, you know, or they make leadership checks, and if one fails, he dies, and you're just like, that's it?
Yeah.
But no, they have one thing that can potentially kill psychers, and then they have one special character where it's just like, no, her unit's immune to psychic powers. And you're just like, really?
But
this is all they get in an environment where, you know, the codex right before has, you know, librarian right. dreadnoughts, you know, shit like that. And the codex right after throws out 30 a turn, and they have nothing that they could possibly do.
Well, so I think that, you know, we talk about it being imbalanced, and we talk about these new books where, like you say, it's missing or that component isn't even thought of. I mean, I'm sure Jess Goodwin, you know, when they're doing the designs and they're putting these things together, and it's like, I'm sure it came up at one point, but again, I think that it's short-sighted more than anything else, in the sense that where they feel like psychic powers are a huge part of this army, they overdo it. And then where they feel like this army has no psychic powers, or they have vague psychic powers, it's so minimalistic that it's almost laughable. And like you said before, with the direction that the game is going with armies like Grey Knights, and Grey Knights kind of started the trend, and then the new Space Marine book continued the trend, and Eldar have always kind of been like, yeah, you get fortune and you get
Go.
You know, it's just like, hey, good for you.
What I don't get is just like, you know, you read the fluff and it's just like, the Eldar are the most powerful psychers in the galaxy. They have the shittiest psychic powers in the game. I mean, don't get me wrong, Fortune Guide and Doom. Yeah, well, the fluff
mandrakes are master assassins.
It is true. You know, well, in the fluff, Eldrad is the most powerful psyker that has ever existed in the universe.
Right.
And Najal Stormcaller has a stick that says 2/3 of Eldrad's psychic powers are bitches and they don't go anywhere.
Exactly, like, right?
Like, really? He has a stick? Twitch, yes. Twitch.
It's a scary stick. But like I was saying,
Wolf o'clock. It is my wolf stick.
It's one of those things that, you know, it's short-sighted, right? Like, it doesn't necessarily fit with what it is, and it's still crammed in, but now it's so big, it doesn't fit. I feel like, and this is where I kind of want this conversation to go, I feel like Games Workshop needs to decide, yay or nay, when it comes to psychic powers. And if the answer is yes, then what they need to do is they need to start putting it in the rule book, and they need to start making things applicable to all armies. I don't care if you're going to go ahead and give armies basic psychic defense, like the Eldar, Dark Eldar, have like high psychic defense. Okay, good. Give me some fucking psychic defense, right? You know?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I would like to see it in the core rule book like a magic phase. Now, I'm not saying that they should run it like a magic phase and wins the magic dice, shit like that, but at the end of the day, you're absolutely right. It should be a level playing field. When you have such over-the-top psychic powers as exist out there. I mean, you know, like I said, Grey Knight Purifiers have an ability that strikes at initiative infinity and says every model I'm engaged with takes a wound.
Right.
If I play Marines, I don't give a fuck. But that means that I, as a Tyranid player, if I was able to get 30 Hormagaunts into combat, I just lost 15 of them at initiative I can't even swing yet. And you're just like, what the fuck? You know, so it's just like there are some very, very, very powerful psychic powers, and more than half the armies have no way to stop it. So I would like to see it make it into the main rulebook in 6th edition 40K, along with random charge distances. Am I right?
Yes.
You know, I really think that that would alleviate the pain that is psychic powers in 40K right now, because I just don't see them as being fair. You know, I mean, really, if you're going to go to a competitive tournament, like, you know, as I said before, even if there is absolutely no place for a librarian to exist in your army, you take the librarian because you need the psychic hood.
Yeah.
And I would rather see players have the freedom of choice the way they used to.
Right.
I would rather see, you know, players able to take what they want rather than just being like, well, you know, God forbid I run into someone with psychic powers, so I need a hood. And even beyond that, to armies that are hinged upon psychic powers, like the new Grey Knights, like Tyranids, where it's just like, no, your entire army synergy is built on psychic powers, it should be fair, you know, there should be a fair way for them to still use it, other than, oh, I'm playing against Eldar, you have runes of whatever gayness makes me roll 3 dice every time and perils on a 12+.
Yeah,
well, good game.
Right.
You know, because it's just like, I'm not going to get feel no pain off, which means my monsters aren't survivable. I'm not going to be able to get this off or that off, and my zoanthropes are worthless, so I can't blow up your tanks. And, you know, it's just like a good game.
Right. Right. But this is the mentality of Warhammer 40,000, right? And it's this mentality of just like, but this army beats this army.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, because, you know, that is one of those really, really fucked up things about 40K, is even online they talk about how 40K is a game of rock, paper, scissors.
Very much so.
And they're right. It absolutely is, because there are certain, like, my Tyranids, for example, I will get beat like a redheaded stepchild should I play Grey Knights, because it's just the innate abilities all throughout, all the psychic powers, their psychic defense, the fact that my psychic defense doesn't work if they're in a tank because that FAQ screwed the pooch. That one isn't Credace's fault, actually. So, you
will blame him still.
Yeah, that's right. Fuck you, Credace. You know, I cannot beat them. It's an auto lose. Same as if a demon's army comes out. And that's kind of what pisses me off about that book, because they're just like, no. We've decided that if you don't play Space Marines, you're a leg down.
Yeah,
you need to make sure that this army is being played by a moron or his dice fuck him.
Right.
Those are the only ways you're going to win. At least when I play a game of fantasy, I can go to a tournament with any list whatsoever And at the end of the day, it is going to come as much down to mission and generalship and dice. You know, it's not going to just be like, oh, you play wood elves, huh? Auto lose. I have lizard men. They make me a mediocre general.
Yeah, no, no, I agree. I really do feel like the more you focus on psychic powers as an aspect of the game, as opposed to like a perk or a special ability or a rule mm-hmm. or some shit like that, is when you start really realizing that it's this, not only is it this short-sighted endeavor, but it's there's so much room for expansion and improvement and just adding this whole new aspect to the game that doesn't necessarily slow things down. But, you know, and it's not even an issue of balance. It's just like, imagine what you could do if you take psychic powers from the, this psychic power gives you a free last cannon, and this psychic power mm-hmm. kills things. Like, to this psychic phase or this ability to use psychic powers where, you know, you actually are able to augment your armies, or you're able mm-hmm. to, you know, take control of your opponent's units, or, you know, anything that actually makes sense when you talk about psychic powers, as opposed to like, this psychic power creates a phantasmic wolf who strides across the battlefield and tries to bite at your Carnifex. Oh, look, he bit him in half. You know, that's how psychic powers work. You know, like, it's just, it's bad anime. I'll say it. It's bad anime.
Ooh.
But no, but I'm sorry. Like, it's just this idea where they're just like psychic powers can do anything.
No, you are absolutely right. And like I said, that to me is the crux of it. Because basically, if armies have very effective psychic defense, Games Workshop has built two armies so far. You know, who knows how many more they're going to go with. But there are two armies so far that literally hinge upon psychic powers. And so if you run into an army with phenomenal psychic defense, and I'll always come down to the Eldar, because, you know, so far they're it. Them and Space Wolves with their douchey, on a 4+, I cancel it.
Mm-hmm.
You're hosed. You know, you're fighting for your life. You're already down because your army was built around having this mechanic, and it's been eliminated. So now, you know, play with a broken army. That's what you're doing. And at the same time, you know, on the other end of the spectrum is, if I have one of these armies that focuses on this, you know, psychic synergy, and you have no psychic defense, you just bend over and take it. You know,
there's no stopping it.
Yeah, exactly. Hope to God I'll pull your hair a little bit while I'm going. You know,
hope so that I have to hope that you roll an 11 or a 12.
Yeah. And that's it. And so to me, that is why I really don't see it as being this very fair mechanic. I think Games Workshop has taken it too far. And I really hope that in the rumored next summer release of 6th edition, that it's addressed, because I really, you know, I see it being a problem. And really, what's going to happen next when Eldar come out? They're going to look at Grey Knights and be like, okay, so those motherfuckers there got psychic powers, so we got to take this to 11. Because they're the Eldar.
Yeah,
so
there is that idea of, you know, escalating rule books and, you know, as psychic powers grow. But, you know, it's Eldar, so there's always a chance that it's not going to change at all.
You know, actually, I'm going to make a prediction. They will give them the exact same, but they'll remove Doom. Because like I said, if you look, what they have now is what they had in 2nd edition.
Right.
And then in 3rd edition, they took away Doom to give it back in 4th edition. So in 5th edition, it's only fair they take it back away.
Well, okay, I just want to see Games Workshop.
And then remove all psychic defense, because, whatever.
Yeah, I just want to see Games Workshop look at this as an opportunity to add more depth to the game and another aspect of the game in that could really make a huge difference, and to not go so fucking over-the-top anime with it. Like, it just, we don't need more phantasmic wolves. We just don't.
You know, like I said, I haven't even read the Grey Knight book yet, so I don't even know what the stupid description for half of their psychic powers are. But I'm sure it's as retarded as wolves riding wolves riding
well,
wolves.
They use Tau technology, and their big super guy rides through the warp like he's a surfer. Anyways, we're going to move on to the stupidity check for this week. And then we're going to read a little bit of mail and kind of talk about that before we end out the show. Nathan, what do you got for us?
All right, so slowish week at work. So I was trolling Warseer. I know. But what kind of struck me was, you know, I was going through the army list thing, which is one of those things I do before a tournament, is I like to kind of put my finger on the pulse of what's going on. So I like to see what lists other people are building and putting up. And it was a particularly active day for High Elves. And the reason I'm going to have to say that this is a failed stupidity check is every High Elf thread, of which there were seven, said, my army's using Teclis, and don't try to talk me out of it, because Teclis is so good, I'm just going to make sure that I take him all the time, always. So by all means, provide feedback, as long as it's not take Teclis out.
Right.
You know, and so to me, I just have to look at that, and I have to say, you know what? Failed stupidity check, you know, like it just, I can't even describe it. Is Teclis good? Yes.
Yes.
Teclis is an amazing special character. He is budget for his 450 points.
Indeed.
But when we're talking High Elves, we covered this with our higher learning.
Yes.
This is an elite specialized army that requires that relies on synergies between its units to not get picked apart and you know, blown apart in pieces.
Right.
Basically, that's what High Elves are. So there were three 2,000-point lists that were running Teclis, taking up 25% of their lists. And I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You know, because basically what every one of these people is saying is, this character is so good I can't lose games, which is false. Because Teclis, Teclis has no ward save and is toughness too.
Yeah.
All I need is my Lore of Death wizard to get close to him and have him let in one spell, and he's fucked.
And I think Teclis, for a lot of people's perception of him, is definitely a failed stupidity check, because there have been entire threads where people are just like, how do I deal with Teclis? And like 60% of the replies are just like, kill him. Charge his unit, like fire, throw any, like there's 100 ways to deal with Teclis. Like, he's really not that hard to kill.
No, exactly. I mean, like, yes, you can't do stupid, dumb bullshit of, well, I'm just going to throw these five fast cav at him and his unit, and I'll just allocate attacks, and oh, always strikes first, they're dead. No, of course you can't do that. You can't dedicate a throwaway unit to killing Teclis. But he's not that hard. You get in there, you allocate some attacks on him, and he'll fucking fold. He's toughness two, three wounds.
He's still miscast like everyone else.
Yeah,
you know. So, I mean, honestly, like, it just... I feel like people depending on Teclis at 2,000 points is retarded. Because you still have to have a BSB. You have to. We all know this. You have to. Unless you're playing undead, you have to have a BSB. And you probably want to have some sort of hero in there for at least a little bit of punch to go with it. So when you start talking about lords and heroes adding everything up, you know, you're getting close to 800-900 points in your list, where it's just like, so now you've only got about 1,000 points worth of troops. And when you're playing high elves, that ain't that much on the table.
And 500 points of them have to come from your core, which high elves don't have. High elves do not have fantastic core. Like, that, you know, so that's the thing. So it's just like, okay, I've got my 800 points of characters, my 500 points of core, and that leaves me with 700 points of good, effective army. And that's why, like I said, it's just such a mind-numbingly stupid notion that every single High Elf player, regardless of, you know, point size, has to have Teclis in it.
Right.
And I'm just like, what is wrong with you? Like, it's just like, think for yourself. Why don't you start developing a strategy? You know, because, like I said, Teclis is good, but there's no lore of magic where it's just like, oh, you took this with that and those? Oh, good game. You know, it's not like that penny arcade. You know, it doesn't happen that way, you know?
Right.
So that's why I'm just like, you know what? Fucking fate. Like, it just...
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted by the stupid, because I mean, even when I was trying to work on High Elves, and when I was thinking it and I was doing up lists, I never had Teclis in, because I was always just like, oh, he's good, he's great, he's fantastic, but he's so many points. Like, it's just like, this is an army where points are at a fucking premium,
right?
So why would I spend 150 points more for an Archmage if I want an Archmage? Because, like, really, if I'm playing 2,500, it's just like, well, I could take Teclis, or I could take a motherfucking Star Dragon.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, their dragons are retardedly good. And for the cost of Teclis, you know, you can pick up a Lord on a Star Dragon and just have him go blazing through units, and you'll probably have a heck of a lot more of an effective game that way than you would with Teclis. But, you know, I do see the draw of Teclis. He's easy mode. Oh, you know, like he's very much just like, ah, everything goes off.
Oh, yeah, no, he's absolutely easy. Because, I mean, really, when you look at it, he's generating D3 bonus dice. Everyone always takes the banner sorcery. So you're getting your Winds of Magic plus 2D3 dice. So you're almost always giving him 12 dice or close to it. You know, right. You're always really high, 8 plus, right. Hands down.
But again, it's all about more war gear, more points you don't have to spend, right?
Well, exactly. You know, because like I said, if you add on the banner of sorcery, that is 500 points. As you're saying, you know, here's 500 points,
yep.
Plus the banner of sorcery can only fit onto one of my special units, White Lions, Swordmasters, or Phoenix Guard,
yep.
Or your BSB. And if you're going to put the banner of sorcery on a BSB, you're a fucking idiot because it's just a waste of a BSB.
You know,
because now he's super soft, easy to kill because he doesn't have armor, or he doesn't have a great banner like the battle banner or banner of the world dragon.
Yeah, and so I think the big thing to point out here is, as I mean, like there's 100 ways to deal with Teclis. They all mm-hmm. amount to just kill him. But I think the thing to point out here is we're talking about 2,000 points, and we're talking about kind of tournament level gaming. Where it's you know, you're planning on playing Watchtower, Blood and Glory, like you're planning on playing these scenarios that are going to test your army for various types of builds, you know. So all in all, it really is a bad thing. I think at 3,000 points, if you want to toss Teclis in there, go for it. I think he's a great choice at 3,000 points. He's almost a must.
Yeah, absolutely. Because at least at that point, you're not sacrificing your list. You're not saying every one of my eggs is in the magic basket. If this goes to shit, good game, because I've got no plan B.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's get on to a little bit of mail that we got this last week here. First email here is from Clay. He says, hey guys, just starting to tune in. I'm really enjoying the discussions. I know with the Grey Knights coming out, you were just waiting to pounce. Hello. What? No, I couldn't even. Yeah.
Really, so we don't come off as fair and balanced in our reporting. Oh, I failed journalism school for this.
True.
I never even went to journalism school, but I would have failed had I gone.
So my question kind of sort of pertains to that. I have noticed a serious trend to instant death options as of late. It is really killing the element of hero hammer that a lot of players have been using as of late. With many of these options causing remove from play, even Eternal Warrior won't help. I think at least our local metagame has gone the route of supporting characters because of the greater choice, or being the greater choice. It's not as epic, but it's also not as devastating when you lose a model. Just running what your thoughts are on this, is it good or bad? P.S. Examples of what I'm talking about is Jaws of the World Wolf, Bone Swords, Dark Eldar Thing for Psykers, Lucas the Trickster, and obviously the entire Grey Knight Codex. keep up the great topics, Clay. Okay, we kind of talked about this a little bit, and I brought this topic up with Nathan before the show, so I know that we kind of talked a little bit about it, but, you know, I think that this goes right in with psychic powers, where instant death is one of these trends that's growing, and it's starting to overbalance to the extreme, mm-hmm. where some armies have a lot of instant death, some armies have none. Some are really affected badly by it, some aren't at all. And it does add a strange sort of element to the game that further reinforces this idea that 40K is the rock, paper, scissors of, oh, you're playing these guys? Well, I play them. All right, good game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that when it comes to instant death, I would like to see maybe just, I don't know, whereas I would say psychic powers, let's go crazier with it. Let's look at this as an opportunity. I think instant death is something that should be reeled back. What was wrong with strength doubling the toughness?
No, absolutely, because really, back in the good old days, oh. I wore an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. Back in the good old days, the only things that were instant death were strength, double toughness, and force weapons.
Yeah.
Eternal Warrior didn't even exist, you know, because it was one of those things where it's just like, yeah, but if he gets, you know, I don't care how tough your captain thinks he is, if he takes a railgun to the face, he's been spread over an 80-yard radius. There's not enough left of him to be tough.
He's become a mist element.
You know, exactly. Oh my god, a mist demon, get him. you know, but like, that was it. And then they started, you know, and that was back when force weapons were only had by...
Librarians.
What? librarians and Eldar Wraithguard with their Wraith cannons.
Right.
That was it. And you're just like, hey, this isn't bad. And then Chaos Space Marine Demon Princes got Eternal Warrior, and everyone was like, hey, what's this? Why would you even need this? And then they started handing it out like it was candy. And with Eternal Warrior came instant death abilities out the ass. And then, yeah, now what you're seeing is that added element of, oh, you know, we kind of made a mistake making things Eternal Warrior, so let's make instant death that ignores Eternal Warrior. Hey! And that's when you're just like, really? Really, Games Workshop? Like, it's just, yeah, I agree. You know, you don't see the big points spent on it, and it really does lead to that rock, paper, scissors element. And to me, I think that's bad as any time the game is resolved in the list building phase.
Yes.
It's such a shame, because in a lot of cases, people travel for these tournaments. Like, I don't know how pissed off I would be if I bought a ticket to a big event and I flew down and I pay, you know, because really, like, if I'm going to fly down, I'm spending, what, $1,000? Hotels, flights, all of that. I'm going to spend $1,000 only to show up to the table, realize that he has my list's kryptonite, and I can no longer win.
Yeah, I think...
I'm out of the running for everything because this guy plays Grey Knights. And you're just like,
right,
fuck.
Kyle, who writes the Imaginary Wars blog, kind of back even before we started this podcast, he had done a post where he had kind of talked about why he likes War of the Ring and why he, you know, kind of compared it to 40K and things of that nature. And one of the things that he had talked about, which being a huge drawback to 40K, is this idea of just like you put something on the table and then turn one, you take it off the table. And it does nothing, right? Like its entire purpose in that particular game was you put it on the table and you take it off the table. You know, because it's the way the game works now. And with the more instant death coming up with psychic powers, with all of these different abilities, with all of these new interesting things that they keep putting into the game. And I do say interesting because they are, but it further reinforces that whole idea of just like, oh, you're going to, you know, I'm just going to say, take that away. And then that is deleted. You know, I don't really like playing a game where you know that, oh, if you don't roll first turn, you know you're just going to be removing a unit off the table. And it's not a strategy element. It's just one of those aspects of the game, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things I like about Firestorm Armada, and again, this is just a tangent, doesn't really have anything to do with 40K.
Shameless plug.
What am I plugging? I like Firestorm Armada, so there it is. But no, it's just like, you can sit there and roll 100 dice, you know, like you'll do 1 point of damage in that one round of firing, unless you roll a critical and it does bonus stuff, which is on top of it, right? And I feel like that's really cool, because even if you don't go first, your ships are going to get shot, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're just going to be wiped off the table and you didn't get to play with it in the first place, unless something catastrophic happens. And that's why I really feel like this is something that Games Workshop needs to reel back in. They need to bring it back. Like I said, what was wrong with strength, double toughness equals instant kill? Like, why do we need all this extra bullshit? So moving on, we got an email from Andrew. The whole first paragraph is talking about how super awesome we are, so I won't bore you guys with that.
Really? I think you should.
But anyways, he says, that's enough of that for now.
I'm married. I don't get told I'm awesome all that much.
Well,
so.
Yeah, that's very true. He says, okay, that's enough of that for now. I finally completed listening to all of your shows, and I can finally start asking questions. I have to keep this short and to the point, as I hope. As always, you are keeping the scotch flowing. Good Lord. I have a number of things I'd like to hear you guys discuss, but one at a time. First off, what do you think about the true line of sight? Oh, he's being witty. You can't be witty, because we read these at the end of the podcast, and I'm like reading it at a distance. He says, what do you think about true line of shite? sight. Personally, I hate it, as I think that the real world dynamic has no place in an entirely representational world apart from the dork factor, whereby you get to blind your opponent with your frickin' laser beam pointer. That's also fun, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it's game-breaking because it does cut both ways, but it does make me ask why GWY, especially when it prevents people from doing conversions. Oh, looky, all my Imperial Guard is modeled going to ground. That's why you can only see the top of their heads. You know what I mean. And what is with the I can see the guy in the squad so I can kill every guy when they pop out around the corner or when I see it just happening mate mechanic. And the one, blah, 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 blah. Love you, Andy. Okay, true line of sight. Yes, it cuts both ways. I feel like true line of sight, you can argue both ends of the spectrum so completely that it's always going to be an issue of taste. There are some people who are going to look at it and say, like, it's the modeler's nightmare. I hate it. It doesn't make any sense. And you're going to look at some people who say, like, but it's realistic and we want realism. And I do see the corner of your tank, so I should be able to shoot it.
All right. Here is my take on true line of sight. Every single person that hates it, your problems can be resolved by the scenery you play with. And that's all there is to it. You know, because really, like, you know, tell me how much better the fourth edition system of size terrain sizing was. You know,
right.
If you know, size 3 and I had a size 3 vehicle, you couldn't see past it. Okay, why don't you build a forest or a building that doesn't allow me to see past it, and that fixes that issue. So for me, I don't care. You know.
Yeah.
I have played on tables that are absolute garbage for true line of sight. I've played on tables that are fantastic. And so, you know,
you've played on tables with a small sheet of felt that is a 100-foot tall forest that blocks your
Trigon,
tall trigons. So
it's like, yeah, my like 9.5-inch tall model gets right. Complete blocked line of sight because you couldn't be bothered to build trees. Do it up.
Right. And I think that's a very good point, that true line of sight is not necessarily an issue of the true line of sight rules. It's more an issue of the terrain that you're playing with and the terrain rules. You know, I agree with you. I personally don't care. If you happen to be able to see a guy, sure, you can see him. In 40K especially, where you're always playing the, like, exactly 2 inches apart game, I like the idea of them putting an aspect of the game in where it's just like, no, bunch them up. If you want to get that cover save, or if you want to be behind that building, you better bunch them up. I get it. I get it to an extent. It's just, like I said, I think you can argue both sides of it so completely that there's almost no point.
Yeah, no, like I said, you're absolutely right. Is both sides have a leg to stand on. But for me, the reason why I'm okay with true line of sight is every problem you have with it is resolved by playing with better terrain, better scenery. And the whole notion of, how can you see one model and be able to wipe up the whole squad? I'm going to call you out on this, Andy. How can you say realism is bullshit, I hate true line of sight, and then say, but realistically, you can only see one guy. Why does the whole squad die? It just, you know, it doesn't make sense. Because like I said, at the end of the day, this is a game. You know, if...
I think that's what he was saying. I think that what he was saying was kind of the idea of, I understand that this uber realism doesn't necessarily meet its point here, and then this kind of contradicts that to an extent. I think it's more just, we've all been in that situation at one point or another where it fucks us. You know, and it's just like, God damn it, I hate this crap. But at the end of the day, you have to kind of look at it and say, like, it is just a board game. You know, it is just this, you know, aspect of the game where it's just like, okay, in this situation, this happens. Yeah, I get it. I get it. He would dive.
And let us not forget that playing with laser pointers will allow you to determine whether your opponent is or is not a cat. That is always important.
I think that's hugely important.
All right, next question.
But anyways, he says, thanks for a great show. A great, great show. I have never painted so much in a short period of time whilst catching up on all of the casts. Well, thank you very much, Andy. That's it for the mail that we have for this week. You know, I think we're going to go into another thing that has kind of been requested a little bit, which is just, what are you working on right now? I think you're still working on your demons, right?
Oh yeah, God, my I have to literally do an army from 0 points up to 2,000 by mid-June, as well as build a display board and a fancy way to make an army list. So that will always be what I'm working on. But I did just finish number 26 out of my Plague Bears.
Hot.
So they are done.
Yeah, and no you and more... I had a game. Yeah. Rage-filled game.
Yeah.
Super cheating. Cheat, super cheat.
Yeah, but see, the problem was you were cheating me and I was cheating me because, yes. Hey, it turns out that Flamers of Tzeentch have two wounds apiece. And man, oh man, does that
I cheated me as well. I did cheat myself as well. But no, I mean, it was just, it was a very odd game. Like, it was good that we weren't doing a podcast in between it because
yes.
It was just, it was a very strange game. And it's like all of my first game with the new Orc Army book and like my second game with my Orcs in 8th edition. And it was like...
And my first game with my demons.
Your first game with your demons. So it was, you know, it was very much like our first game of Firestorm Armada where it was just like, yeah, we're aware we're cheating.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Like we know we're screwing up rules.
Well, yeah, because like that was the thing is what the whole time we were playing Firestorm, you're like, God, I don't know if that works that way. I'm like, yeah, as long as we both play it, no one gets an unfair advantage.
The knife cuts both ways. But no, like I said, I had another game with Jason, which was a lot of fun. Played against his Terrans and with my Directorate, I picked up a bunch more stuff from my Directorate, and I've been painting them up. I just want to keep doing it and get that fleet done and done, and maybe kind of see where it goes. I'm done with my Marines. I don't think I'm going to go back to them again.
Nice.
I got really fired up for them. I did a little bit, and I was like, ah, fuck it.
I painted like three models, and I was like, to hell with them.
Pretty much.
No, for me, like I said, I'm happy that I got my Plague Bearers done this weekend. I'm going to get all of their bases. Actually, I'm going to decide on a basing scheme for them because I've been procrastinating on that. Do it all up, get them finished, get them sealed, get them done. And next week is Hierophant Biotitan week. In honor of you, Maddie, just for you, you call me out on my podcast, you better be prepared for the amount of ass-fucking you're going to get next weekend.
There you go. Well, all right. So we are going to be out of town next week for the podcast, and so I have no doubt that we will be already scotched by the time we get in front of the microphone.
If the statement is three sheets to the wind, I expect us to be like 7 or 8 sheets by the time. Because really, we're all getting there, and we're going to start drinking Friday, and I think we're going to stop drinking Sunday, so we're hungover enough to drive home Monday.
Jesus.
So.
Oh, Lord.
We should tell our doctors to get liver transplants ready.
Well, thank you for everybody for sending in their emails, and, you know, keep sending them in. We do typically tend to read them on the show. But that's Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.